Alexander. You heard that. So did my dad.
Welcome to XVAD, the talk show that gets you talking on the Xandermonium Radio Network, live from New York City. I'm Xander Gibb.
I'm Tony Lasacco.
On today's show, the hottest of topics, and we throw those phone lines open to you for you to get off your chest, whatever you want to get off your chest. And in part two, Thomas S. Schmitz joins us. More to come in a mere moment. So you can call us or Skype us. The number is the same, 347-884-9061. That's 347-884-9061. You can tweet us. The tweet deets are on the XVAD Facebook show page for today. Feel free to comment in the feed around the video, and we will endeavor to keep you involved in the conversation. Welcome back to the show, Tony. How is the world with you?
The world's pretty good with me. We had some creepy stuff go on in Newport Richey lately that I was a witness to. Kind of interesting here locally what happens.
Really?
The carnivals bring out all the freaks. I was doing a session with a five-year-old child, you know, at the park, right? And his mom was with me, and the child was. Like, the child stepped, like, a couple of feet away from his mom, right? And the child comes running up to his mom to say, "That man took a picture of me." And before the child could finish talking, some guy in his middle ages walks past the mom really quickly, has this, like, evil grin on his face, and says, "Yes, I did. You have a beautiful boy. Such a beautiful child," and then took off.
Wow.
Now tell me that's not a little, you know, but I mean, I don't see any reason why some middle-aged man would randomly be taking pictures of five-year-old children at a park, at a carnival area.
Did you report it to the police? Because I know I would have done, because that kind of thing is alarming. And if you can guarantee, if he's done that there, he's done it elsewhere. And that definitely is a worry.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a crime, obviously. It's just, it's definitely suspicious and creepy. You know, like, why the hell are you doing this, you know?
I'm not sure that it's not a crime, because it's kind of a bit like stalking, isn't it, when you think about it? If you're taking pictures of kids without permission, that's really concerning. You know, if I was out with my niece in the park, and some person started taking pictures, I mean, you know, the paparazzi follow me around all the time, but, you know, if they were particularly taking pictures of my niece, I would be not very happy, because you should ask for permission. I think that you're really supposed to ask for permission to take anyone's picture, you know, nowadays.
Yeah, and what made it creepier was that he admitted to it, and he was smiling when he said it. You know, you would think a normal person would lie and say, "I was just photographing the store," or something like that, you know? And it wasn't a professional photographer, because the guy didn't have a camera on him, so it must have been with the smartphone, you know? Like,
wow.
If it was a photographer, you know, in the area, you could maybe understand or something, but I don't know, it was weird. But it just shows, you know, like, carnivals and people in parks, gotta watch your children.
Did you call the police? So, you know, like I asked,
no,
I said, did you
No, I could not at the time. I posted it right afterwards on Facebook because I was actually with the mom and the child, and I couldn't stop and report it, and she didn't want to report it. She was just happy to grab her kid in her eyesight and, you know, finish the session with me and stuff and then take him home. So it really wasn't, you know, my place to do that other than to notify them later on, you know, hey, this is what happened. But the guy's long gone. I didn't get a picture or description. So it does no good, really, basically, you know?
Yeah, I would have had to take his picture. I'm not going to name names, but I did used to date someone that was quite famous. So we always used to get cameras stuck in our faces. And so I would, it was when phones with cameras first came out. So when people took our picture, I would do the same just to see. And they think that was weird. But my point was, if you're sticking a camera in my face, why shouldn't I stick one in yours and take a picture too? You know, there is no privacy nowadays, and I think that that's a concern because so many people out there seem to have this ideology that that everything goes. You know, I don't know if it's worse in America than it is in the UK, but it certainly is bad here sometimes because, you know, like even on social media, people feel like they've got the right to say and do exactly what they please, and it bothers me. It really does. You know, I'm pretty tolerant, but a lot of people I give as good as I get. You know, if you see my Twitter feed, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. Because when people are rude, I'll give it back to them. And it's a worry that there is this. You know, there is no privacy anymore. You know, I mean, let's face it. You know, Obama's been tapping our phones and, you know, he's been listening into conversations, you know, which came to light this week. And I know a lot of people have poo-pooed Devin Nunez, I think it's pronounced. But I definitely think it's the case. I definitely think that they have been tapping Donald Trump and listening into his conversations, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that if they're doing that to him, he's doing it to other people too. It's been proven that they've done it to conservatives. I mean, look at all of that with the IRS. You know, that was during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
It's definitely worried. I want to say hello to a few people in the live feed. Hi to Anuviana. Hello, Dollface, even. Hi to Eileen. Welcome. Hi to Ronald. Hi to Gina. Hi to Zell. Hi to Stella. Hey to Swoop. Welcome. Hey to Dave. And hey to Stella. Welcome to our early birds. Now, I want to jump right into the first story because I'm pretty pissed about this today. It really has gotten my goat so much. I've been... hi, Mark from Canada. I've been tweeting Mr. Senator Asshat Schumer all that. So after the Republican replacement for Obamacare was dramatically pulled back today at the last minute due to lack of support, top Washington Democrats took a victory lap mocking President Trump and claiming the bill's failure as a win for their party. Really? And the American public, like hell it was, and Obamacare is actually an affront to all of us, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer issued a statement blaming the bill's failure on what he characterized as two hallmarks of the Trump administration. Are you ready for this, Schumer?
Yes.
Incompetence and broken promises. How the hell dare you? He said, in my life, I've never seen an administration as incompetent as the one occupying the White House today. Let's think about the Obama administration for 8 years, you big, ugly fool. They can't write policy that makes sense. Well, you could be describing the Obama administration. They can't implement the policies they do right because they can't get their story straight. And today we've learned that they can't close a deal and they can't count votes. Well, clearly the vote could be counted because the votes that were counted indicated that President Trump won over Hillary Clinton. So much for the art of the deal, said Upchuck. in a press conference surrounded by other congressional Democrats, minority leader, nutty Nancy Pelosi, who was serving as House Speaker when the Affordable Care Act was passed, was buoyant. Today is a great day for our country. Really, Nancy, how so? Pelosi said it's a victory. What happened on the floor is a victory for the American people, for our seniors, for people with disabilities, for our children, for our veterans. Pelosi charged the Republicans with spite for originally scheduling a vote on the replacement legislation for Thursday, the 7th anniversary of the passing of the Affordable Care Act. Speaking from the Oval Office later this afternoon, President Trump, predicting the imminent failure of the Affordable Care Act, was eager to associate its continuance with both Schumer and Pelosi. I think the losers are Pelosi and Schumer because now they own Obamacare. They own it 100%. Well, you know, I think that today was actually a loss for the American people because Obamacare is the most preposterous package that has ever been put before the American people. But I'm keen to hear your views on this, Tony.
As far as the Obamacare and what happened to it?
No, as far as the fact that the bill didn't go through today and the fact that Obamacare is the biggest load of tripe that, ever.
I'm sorry. I thought you were asking my view on the original Obamacare for a minute. Okay, well, my view on, as they call it, Trump Care, which, first of all, let's make a distinction. This was not Trump Care. Okay,
yeah.
Donald Trump did not propose this idiocy. This was Paul Ryan Care. Okay, so that's the first thing I want to say. For people to blame Donald Trump for Paul Ryan's stupid legislation that was Obamacare-like to begin with is wrong. Trump had nothing to do with this. He made a mistake in backing it to begin with. He should have, actually, in my view, stood with the Freedom Caucus and said, this is not what I promised the American people. It's a damn shame because he tried to negotiate, and I understand what he was trying to do. He tried to do a negotiation. The last version of the bill was a good bill for the American people. It repealed those mandates. It would have meant people like you and me, you didn't have to pay for maternity care or pediatric care if we didn't need it. Okay? Because what people don't understand is the whole problem with Obamacare, the biggest problem is this one-size-fits-all policy. I mean, imagine if our car insurance companies, you know, if you got a Honda, you pay one price, but if you get a Ferrari, you pay another price because it takes them, say, $60,000 to replace the Ferrari and $20,000 to replace the Honda. Well, what they did with health care was everybody pays the same for the same coverage. Imagine if we all had to pay for Ferraris and Rolls Royces on car insurance. Our rates would skyrocket, and we wouldn't be using what we paid for. Well, that's what they did with health care. And Paul Ryan's stupid Obamacare policy, Ryan Care, replacement for Obamacare, was going to keep those mandates in. The conservatives threw a fit, rightly so, and said, no, the mandates are the problem. We're not going to back this if you don't keep your promise to the American people. So they took that out, and they caved to the conservatives. But then the moderates said, oh, no, we want socialist medicine. We're going to not back it. And they didn't have the votes. It's a tragedy, and it's a loss for the American people. We need to repeal, and what Rand Paul said originally was correct. There's nothing wrong with repealing the law before we replace it. If they can't agree on a replacement, for God's sakes, get rid of the thing. It's a bad law.
Well, I would agree with you on some of that, but I would disagree on others because here's the thing. If you repeal it, if you repeal it, it's going to actually take a year before anything comes into place because insurance companies are set in stone for a year with a lot of people who have Obamacare. But there are still some of us that weren't better off under Obamacare. And the ideology of making people pay a penalty for not being able to afford health care is kind of lunacy for me. You know, they put Obamacare. What they did is they took what Romney was trying to do in his state, they slapped a few other things in it, and they presented it as an act. And I don't think it was very well thought through. But equally, I don't think that what the Republicans were offering today was that well thought through either. I'm probably going to get a lot of stick for saying this, but I think that maybe Obamacare was fixable. But what do you do in the meantime while you're fixing it? That's the problem for a lot of people. But I just think that President Trump is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Whatever he does, he's wrong. And we keep saying this, but nobody wants to listen. But, you know, he was vilified. He was vindicated this week, you know, with the the wiretapping stuff, with being spied on by the Obama administration. And that, to me, should add to his credibility. But does it hell, you know?
So let me ask you this. You said you disagree on some things. What of what I said did you disagree? Because I'm not getting that very clearly.
I think the worry is that when you cancel, when you repeal, what do you put in while you're waiting to replace it? That's a problem for me.
Oh, okay, I see. Like, you don't agree with just repeal it without a replacement. Okay. Well,
no, because people deserve not to feel scared because the fact that Obamacare is so bad, it scared so many people anyway. I think they shouldn't be put through that again.
Well, you know, I see where you're coming from with that. My big thing is the mandate, Xander. These mandates have to go. The individual mandate, I think everybody agrees, is evil and should go. Forcing people to buy health insurance is just wrong, okay?
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And they were going to repeal that. But the bigger problem that's not talked about is they call them required areas of coverage, I think, what it's called, the essential elements that they are telling insurance companies what must be included in policies. And it's ridiculous to mandate. Before Obamacare, what it was if you wanted a maternity care, you bought that extra coverage. If you wanted substance abuse coverage, you bought that extra coverage. If you were having children, you bought pediatric coverage. And there wasn't this one-size-fits-all policy that drives up costs. And you know what? The concept of insurance, and this is just common sense, and I hope everybody hears me on this. Insurance is a very different business. The concept of insurance is the profit is in not using the service. Insurance companies make money because of what we don't do. They're banking on us not getting into a car accident that the majority of us aren't going to, so we're paying them money that they're going to keep. They're not counting on us all going out and crashing our cars. If we were all to decide overwhelmingly, we're going to have a national crash day with our vehicles and crash our insurances, we would bankrupt the insurance industry because paying for what we're using, what we're paying for. Well, you know what? They changed insurance by doing this, by mandating that they cover these things. They changed it from insurance to a service. They made the insurance companies no longer insurance companies, but they made them a provider of care. Because these aren't services that you might or might not use. These are services that people use on a regular basis. That's the problem.
If I can afford to do whatever they're going to replace it with, because I couldn't afford Obamacare, if I can afford to do whatever they replace it with, then I want a gynecological smear if I'm paying for one. I really freaking do. Because why should I have to pay for things that I'm not going to be able to take advantage of, you know?
Well, Well, and that's the exactly thing. Why should I have to pay for maternity care? I don't have a wife. I don't have a child. I'm not going to have it. Why should I pay for pediatric care? I don't have children. I'm not in danger of substance abuse or mental health treatment. Now, why should I pay for that? I'm not saying somebody else shouldn't get that coverage, but let them pay for that coverage. Then don't make me pay for it and raise my rates, what, 200% in some states for that? For stuff that I'm not going to use. And if
now,
you want to test this theory, go ahead.
I want to use your experiences for a second, Tony, because you were someone that did take on Obamacare, didn't you? How much did your payments go up by when they did the increases?
Well, actually, okay, you can't judge by me because I wound up getting company insurance after the year of Obamacare. I can tell you an example. Mr. Kiko, how much did your payments go up this year? How much? Do you know the numeric amount, how much they raised it?
Just talk amongst
per
yourself.
Per month?
$50.
Okay, his payments went up $50 a month, which was like double the increase, basically.
$100 a year as an increase. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Now, you've got to figure, though, you've got to figure he's on low income. He's on low income,
right.
So he was only paying 50 or 60. And by year two, they went up another $50. So you have to put that in context, too.
Wow. I mean, here's the worry. You know, they actually had the audacity to call it the Affordable Care Act. And there were so many people that still couldn't afford it. I mean, I don't believe in social medicine, but I do believe, you know, I love the British model. What they do in the UK is you don't pay a monthly premium. You basically pay when you need to see a doctor, and you pay on a sliding scale. And that seems to me to be much... that seems to me to be much more affordable. But make everyone pay a premium every month. The only people that are making from this are the insurance companies and obviously the government because they take taxes from it.
Well, you know, here's a question that nobody asks, and our powerful elites in Washington won't address this. I know doctors that can afford – to do office visits. There's some locally, and you've probably heard about them yourself, that do office visits for $25 without insurance for people.
Wow.
$25, some of them charge $35. And then there are doctors now across the country without insurance offering discounted lab works and payment plan for MRIs and CAT scans. If they can afford to do that without insurance, why do we need insurance? Why does the cost triple? I mean, why can a doctor privately charge us as much as our copay to the insurance company? Nobody's asking these questions. Is it really the insurance companies that are bloating the industry and giving us the cost of health care?
But I blame the government for this because the government have for so long been under they've been under the spell of the drug companies because they're making so much money. The government should not be in bed with healthcare companies. It's not good. And you know this ideology of small government would kind of clarify that we should not be held to ransom by insurance companies. You know, it's not them that are just holding the knife. The government's pinning us down on the frickin' bed. And it's not good.
Yes. Now here's another point that I wanted to make with the Obamacare thing and the Trump care or whatever you want to call it care. The health care debacle, let me call it that because it's a mess, okay? A lot of your I think you and a lot of your viewers, I'm going to take heat for this now, and I know it, so go ahead and call in with your hateful comments. That's okay. But I'm not opposed to coverage for the poor and people that can't afford insurance. I'm not opposed to a government program. And the president of the United States agrees with me because he campaigned. He said nobody should be without insurance. I'm not opposed to a separate program. that covers people without insurance sponsored by the government. I'm not heartless. I mean, we should have something to take care of the poor and the uninsured, but it should be not part of our insurance policies and part of the same program. If you want to do that, create a separate charity fund or a separate program that does that. Don't make everybody pay for it like they're getting something for their money when they're not. Don't do socialism backdoor. I mean, if you're going to do socialism, at least call it that and do socialism and say, we have a safety net. We're making everybody pay for the uninsured in America. And the poor people's insurance program will now cover everybody who doesn't have insurance. I'm okay with that, but let's do it honestly. Let's not have this half-butt system. Does that make sense?
It does, but you know, people are going to be surprised at this. I half agree with what Bernie Sanders says about healthcare being a right. Healthcare is a right, you know. I think healthcare and education are right. However, they should not be free. You know, everyone should pay something because there's no such thing as free. There is no such thing as free. Because someone's having to pay for it, even if you're not. And so I think that. You know, when I heard the phrase, first of all, affordable care act, I thought, great, I can finally afford health insurance. But I couldn't because it wasn't that freaking affordable. And because I couldn't afford it, I had to pay a fine for not being able to afford to have health insurance. To me, that's absolute lunacy. I want to come back for a moment, though, to what Donald Trump has tried to do. When he said the other day, when he said it's really hard to work on health care, and all these Dems scoffed about it. Now, do you remember when Bill Clinton was president and Hillary Clinton tried to put some health care together? She couldn't even get it off the ground. So
yes, I do.
Maybe right that it is a very hard thing to do. So let's take a little bit more time with it. Let's actually give him some credit for the things that he's doing right now to make America better. And let's see that actually getting a better quality of health care is going to take a little bit more time. Because the thing is, ultimately, if you want fast, you can keep Obamacare. But if you want good, it's going to take a little bit more time. As far as I'm concerned. Gwen says it should be like a fair tax base on how much a household makes. Impact would be the same for everyone. Yeah, I can agree with that. John says the deductibles are out of control. Basically, you don't have coverage with such high deductibles, yet you are still burdened with obscene monthly payments, which you're forced to pay, which is exactly what I was saying. But charging
absolutely.
Everybody on a and not making them pay a monthly premium would make that difference. Connie says, so we are supposed to pay Medicaid on our own policies. I don't know the answer to that. I just think it has to be looked at urgently. You know, I think he needs to set up Mr. Trump, I know you watch the show, so if you're listening tonight, hi to Melania. But seriously, you need a think tank. You need to get some of the brilliant minds in this country on this to sit down and work it out. But clearly, Obama's ideology was about the health insurance companies and them making more money. It wasn't about the good people of America, you and I. It wasn't about us, and it wasn't about getting the best deal for us. It was actually about him making some more money, because you can't tell me he didn't make any money off that deal.
Who, Obama?
Hello?
Off of Obamacare, you mean? You
yeah,
mean Obama
I
didn't
know,
make money off?
I
don't know about
made,
that. I didn't hear anything about that. I mean,
I don't doubt it. There is no way that he didn't put that together and make some money from doing it. I'm absolutely convinced of it, because why else would it have been so in favor of the health insurance companies?
Well, and you know, here's another aspect of healthcare we don't think about. A lot of the problems with healthcare go back to Bill Clinton and what he did. Okay, years ago, and I remember when I was little, we had different types of hospitals. You had a community hospital, you had, say, a charity hospital, and you had a private hospital, okay? And that's the way it was years ago, you know? And depending on what you had and, you know, where you would go would be different. For example, the charity hospitals, you would take anybody, the poor, no insurance, whatever, they were charity hospitals. Generally,
right.
Community hospitals and public hospitals would do the same. And then you had private hospitals that they didn't even have to let you in the door if you weren't covered or didn't have coverage. But when Bill Clinton passed the reforms, it was everybody could be treated at any hospital no matter what. And that's where
right.
a lot of these problems actually began.
Right.
I think we'd be better off going back to the old system, honestly, where we have charity care for people that don't afford the insurances and just regular care for people that do have insurance. Now, I know the snowflakes would scream and say that's a class society system, but yes, I mean, we are a class society. We have to acknowledge that.
Charity is seen as a dirty word. We have a caller. I'm going to bring them on. Hi, you're live on X-Rad. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Xander. It's Chet from Long Island.
Hey, Chet. How you been?
I'm fine. I'm listening to Tony, correct? Am I correct
yes.
in the –
Yes.
Okay. Listen, I wanted to get this off my chest about everything that's going on with our healthcare system. I totally agree with Tony that Bill Clinton started us down this downward spiral, and it's gotten a lot worse. But for me, in my perspective, as working for my company for over 15 years – We would switch conglomerates all the time in the healthcare industry based on what worked better for us. Since Obamacare was passed, we have strictly gone to United Healthcare because in Eastern Long Island, there's no competition. You have two healthcare industries to provide you with your healthcare. You have United Healthcare and you have Aetna, which Aetna is starting to back down, and they're going to be leaving. So now you only have one. You only have one. And here's the thing. Well, we used to get better coverage from different variables in what kind of health care you wanted to provide me, as my boss wanted to provide me, and I have a family care because I have children. I have two children under my care, under health care. The thing is, with United Healthcare, we used to have a thing that was called, they have different types of plans, right? We were under a Gold Star plan, and now we have slipped down to the Bronze. Now, with the Bronze, right, but this is the thing, okay, the deductibles have gone down, but everything else has doubled. So with my children going to get a checkup, which we know that I have a 7-year-old, I have a 4-year-old, they're getting checkups all the time. With the medicines that they receive, it's doubled. So what was once $20 is now $40. It doesn't outweigh... And actually puts me in the hole. I looked at the numbers. The numbers are staggering, gentlemen, where it really hurts me to a point where it's almost like because me and my ex aren't together anymore and her current husband is in the military. And I say, if there's any way you can get them on your plan, please do, because it's destroying my paycheck. I can't afford it. And I'm having to decide, and this is something that a lot of people with families are having to decide, how many groceries do I get? Can I fill the car up this week? I mean, it's an absolute disaster. Healthcare is in the crapper, and I don't know what to do about it because my boss has no choice, and I have no choice.
Let me stop you for a second, Chet, because I want to get your perspective on something. Do you think healthcare is a right, even though it should be paid for? Don't you think everyone should have the right to healthcare, but everyone should pay something?
All Americans should have the right to healthcare.
Yes.
Americans,
okay.
Legally.
We're
paying for everybody else's stuff. I mean, that's what it comes down to. That's what it's all about. And Tony's absolutely right. It's about eliminating the healthcare industry and becoming a total government takeover. That's all it's about.
And see, See, Xander, I have to disagree with you, honestly, as far as healthcare being a right. Now, you know, I respectfully disagree. I'm a libertarian. So as a libertarian, I believe our rights are established in the Bill of Rights, in the Constitution, and we don't have a right to social services or programs beyond that. Our rights are freedom of speech, you know, freedom of press, freedom of liberty. I don't think that health care or food or rights, they're things everybody should have, okay, in a society we desire. But I think it's – when we say it's a right, that means everybody's entitled to that, and you think from the government.
I added a caveat to that. I didn't say that it should be for free because you know the ideology that the rich will live and the poor will die is a concern because
right.
Ultimately everybody should get health care, but everyone should pay what they can afford to pay. And the system that's in the UK, you know, it used to be free health care in the UK, but they got to a point where they were like, we can't afford to do this, and quite rightly so. So everyone paid something. If you earn a lot, you pay more. If you earn a little, you pay less.
Tony, without a premium.
One second, let me finish. They've never had a premium system there, only for private health care. But here, they rip us off with the premiums every month.
Okay, listen, guys, I just wanted to make this point before I get off with you, and I appreciate you taking the call. But I really think that the discussion of health care for the average American is too hard to understand. When we get together and we talk about it, we talk about the subsidies and the deductions and the double pricing and these conglomerates getting out. But for the average American, they just want to make sure they have health care. But they're getting screwed. That's the problem.
Right.
Is they get their paycheck and they say to themselves, well, this is the way it is. It's up to freedom-fighting Americans, and I agree with Tony 100%. You know, it goes back to the Constitution. We have to keep it constitutionally correct. And if we don't do that, if we stray away from it, then those people are the ones that hurt. And we need to explain ourselves in the end if that's the path that we're going down. I hope not.
I want to take another call before we bring Thomas on. Thomas will be on any second. But tell people where they can listen to your show, Jet, and what it's called.
Yeah, check us up on freedomondeck.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. And every Sunday from 3 to 4 Eastern Time, you can listen to us on 949newsnow.com. We are known to have Xander Gibb and a whole array of wonderful conservatives on our show. And I appreciate you guys taking my call. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, Chad. Have a great weekend. I want
to
take this next call. Very quickly. Hello, you're on X-Rad. What's your name?
Hello?
Where are you calling from? Hi.
Hello? Oh, hey, this is Ronald from California.
Hi, Ronald. What
and,
would you like to share with
us? I'd like to say there's an easy way to take care of all this. We have in our civilization at this time, there's a bunch of states that legalize marijuana. Now, what they could do, the government could do, is legalize marijuana, classify it under the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and they take control. You have someone that you pay to go and rate the weed and see how good it is, and they rate it, and they pay you for it. They take that weed and sell it in the stores. Now, we not learn anything from Colorado, who's making money hand over fist. They have so much money, they have an excess in their coffers. And we take all that, you can pay for medical for every single person in this country. And take it away from the federal government as far as distributing it. They could states do it even if you wanted to. You know,
very,
you don't have the federal government do it.
Ronald, so what about all the people that get addicted to weed in the process?
There's no addiction to weed.
No,
they found how safe it is and how much it cures cancer. Well, I haven't seen anyone that I know that's addicted to weed.
You're talking to someone that was addicted to weed. I was addicted to marijuana when I lived in London. And I had
it's way
treatment.
Better for you than cigarettes or alcohol or anything like that.
But that wasn't the point I was making. I was saying that it is addictive, and the ideology is that it isn't.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that it's addictive.
Well, I'm living proof that it's true, because I was treated for marijuana addiction. And the ideology that it's not addictive is a fallacy, basically. But it's a very interesting concept that you give about
if you don't want to do that, you could take it away from the federal government entirely and let the states regulate their own.
What are they doing with the profits they make from selling weed in other states right now? They're spending it on
Colorado,
changes
roads,
for transportables, et cetera.
What's that? Excuse me?
I said, what are they doing with money they make from selling weed in other states? They're using it to pay for transsexuals to get sex changes. It's not going to the general populace, is the point that I'm making.
They said it was going to, like, do the roads and for education, for other things like that. And for,
absolutely,
you know, hard cases. That's what I was told.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Xander,
I have to stop it there because I have to bring our guest on. But, Ronald, thanks for calling, and I hope you'll continue listening to the show. Have a great weekend.
Oh, I sure will. I love your show. It's good.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Right
on.
Thank you very much.
So our guest, who is waiting in the wings, will get his opinion on all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
He's a writer and contributor for Conservatives for Palin. That's the number four, not the word. He's a regular on this show, and he's my Monday night co-host. I'm talking about the one, the only, the fabulous Mr. Thomas S. Schmitz. Welcome back to the show, Thomas. How is the world with you?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Wonderful.
Good.
Wonderful. So I want to jump right in. I don't know how you've heard of what we're talking about. Well, we're talking about the fact that today the bill was pulled with regards to the replacement for Obamacare. What is your initial reaction to that, and how much do you want to punch up Chuck Schumer in the face for his commentary?
Yeah, well, you know, there are some in D.C. who are fixated on playing checkers, and we have an administration who is playing chess. And so, you know, in this today, they can take swipes of the president. That's fine. But, you know, if you really take a seat back and take a look at this, this is a big, big problem and defeat for Paul Ryan, who has all but staked his entire speakership on passing this bill. And so the big winner that's going to emerge out of this healthcare debacle is going to be the administration. And they've been fighting a kind of behind-the-scenes war against Paul Ryan for years. You know, he is the embodiment of the globalist, corporatist, Republican elite. And so a failed bill is the best chance to get rid of Paul Ryan and advance our nationalist, populist, economic agenda. And, you know, the administration gave Paul Ryan and the entire House Republican leadership enough rope to hang themselves, and they did. And so I think this is going to turn out really great. It's like the president said today, a better bill will come from this, because the House leadership was so fixated on just digging through the weeds and looking for anything negative to complain about, and not even really acknowledge that the bill was supposed to be in three phases, because you have to undo it the way it was done, and it wasn't done in the traditional orthodox way. It was done in a very untraditional, unorthodox, and un-American way, you know, via reconciliation or the nuclear option. And so now it's kind of the Band-Aid's been pulled off, and now everyone gets that the most difficult faction to deal with is the Republican establishment, and not because they're politically strong, but because on policy issues like this Obamacare or healthcare in general, they're convinced that they have all the answers and that, you know, the president just doesn't understand. So he let them make the first move and expose a couple things about them. You know, he said a lot today. He said he learned things, and I think we should take a look at that. You know, first and foremost, we learned that they had not come up with a plan that was ready for prime time. And then secondly, that they had not done any of the political legwork necessary to sell the plan to the voters. And so instead of dictating terms to him, now they kind of depend on him to save their butts politically, and he's going to have to do that. And so first they're going to have to accept whatever plan he'll put forward, and he's not going to make the first move. You know, he's going to let this wing there do that. And yes, they're the big winners in this first round, much more than the Democrats, who are really, you know, claiming victory for doing nothing. You know, this was inside Republican Civil War that did it. It wasn't them that did anything at all. So it's kind of ludicrous to see the Democrats taking a victory lap when they had nothing to do. They didn't support the bill at all. So, you know, they're enjoying this spectacle of this establishment dysfunction that they had no role to play. And so I think what we'll see next is the conservatives, you know, will proceed to with their demand for a full repeal of Obamacare and continue this this lie, really, that they passed many repeals of Obamacare when they never did. They passed defunding bills of Obamacare. And, you know, that, too, is going to strengthen the president, and they're going to need some leadership upon this. And then the president will have to turn to the moderate Democrats who won in states by double that he won states in double digits, that they're up for reelection. And so they're going to have to come to him unless they want to get thrown out of office. And so we're going to see a much better bill come out of this. So, you know, we can sit back and watch the Democrats do a victory leap, and that's fine. But again, they're playing checkers, and we're playing chess.
But it's such an interesting dichotomy, because I listened to what the Donald said today. He said he's basically going to let Obamacare just, you know, implode, and that's what's going to happen. But, you know, this is very indicative of Donald's style of leadership. I can call him Donald because we're pals now. Because he says stuff and does stuff, and he's like, you know, watch me be proved right. And each time he is. But still, they take no notice of him. But I had a second thought to this today. Imagine if he just did an executive order for health care, you know, like Obama did with so many things, just to piss off the Republicans. Imagine if the Donald did it to piss off the Democrats. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah. All hell would break loose. And it's so interesting to sit back and watch these people complain about things that they had no problem with under the Obama administration. But, you know, something that I think people need to really remember is, you know, today when he said that he learned a lot about loyalty, and I think that's a very telling thing. And, you know, if people who have read The Art of the Deal will remember that one of the key rules in delivering the goods, which would be the bill, is that you first have to show the downside. And he did that today. You know, he's showing the downside, and the downside will continue to be shown front and foremost over the next 6 to 8 months, as we see in, you know, rates go higher and higher, and the deductibles be so incredibly high, people don't get to use them at all. And so, you know, he's showing the downside of this bill. And he was right when he said, okay, you know, officially they own it, that being the Democrats. And the moderate Democrats in the red states and the blue states that he won that are up for reelection, they're not going to have any choice but to come to him. And then we'll have a bill that is done that satisfies both sides of the aisle the way it should have been done all along during 2009, when the Democrats kept saying, well, the Republicans haven't offered anything, which is so not true. You know, there were multiple plans floating around that Harry Reid just pretended didn't exist. And so that's not going to work this time.
It kind of made me rub my hands together with glee today hearing that, because I thought, you're so right. This is exactly what's going to happen. Obamacare is going to fall into a big pile of poop, because it's heading there anyway with no support and people being forced to buy it. So they will be running to him to give them a replacement. But, Tony, I want to come to you. I want to come to you for a second from the perspective of, I want to talk again a little bit about the ideology of repeal and replace, because we spoke a little bit about that already. But I want to throw that open further. isn't there a compromise with taking the good bits of Obamacare and keeping them, because there are a couple of good bits of Obamacare, and then building from that?
Well, see, I just think, I don't know, I disagree, Xander, and I used to believe that, but I really think a clean repeal, just a straightforward repeal of all of it is necessary, or if you want to take a sectioned approach. You know, I don't understand why they can't just do this. Just repeal the individual mandate. There's no disagreement on that. Every Republican basically agrees the individual mandate is wrong. So pass a single bill, one sentence that says the individual mandate for health care is repealed. Start with that. Start at least with that. I mean, do a clean bill. Get rid of it one piece at a time. Chop up
right.
Obama one piece of legislation at a time, Obamacare, and then you can work on putting things in place to fix it as you get rid of it. And I think a great start would be just guess a single sentence. The individual mandate is repealed. I'd love to see it saying it was unconstitutional from the beginning, because it really was, and the Supreme Court
was
wrong, and that
it
was a tragedy.
Slicing up Barry's legacy a piece at a time. What do you make of that, Thomas? Should it be like all or nothing, or is it okay to do it in segments?
Oh, I have no problem with doing it in segments. I'd even have no problem with them just sunsetting the whole thing. We'll have to see how it's going to be handled. But either way, you know, this bill that they had today was basically written by the insurance companies. I mean, people need to understand that these congressmen and senators are not sitting around writing bills. You know, these are their constituents that give them money, not their constituents that just give them their sacred vote, but the ones that give them money. Those are the people who wrote the bill. And so this is a good thing that this bill is gone, and now that we can start over and do it further on down the road as more and more of the downside of Obamacare comes forth. You know, there's a whole lot of things that could happen. You know, a deal could be made with the Democrats for something like catastrophic health covered in exchange for repealing Obamacare. And I think the Democrats would take that deal because they would see it as a government-backed catastrophic insurance system and a path to universal health care, which is their dreams. And the Republicans would take that deal because they'd be exhausted of all other options, and it would leave them enough room for the free market just to provide insurance for most health issues and for states to experiment, which is what they're for, with their own policies. States are little laboratories. We have to remember that. And, you know, if it works, you do it in another state. If it doesn't, you don't do it. And so more healthcare stakeholders can be brought into the process, and that's a better thing. And I'm very optimistic about this. I'm glad that this bill is gone. It wasn't that great a bill, and people were not focused on the three phases. They were focused in just what was wrong with phase one, and they kind of ignored that there was a phase two and a phase three. Maybe they're a little shop shy and they don't want to, they don't trust the government, and I don't blame them for that. But, you know, it was supposed to be done in three sections, and the things that people didn't like in the House in this part would be fixed in phase two and phase three. But they, for some reason, people were just ignoring that it was to be done in three phases, and they were just focusing on what they didn't like about phase one, which, you know, I that's not such a good thing. But anyways, it's off the table now. We can move on to other things.
But I want to change the subject just a little for the last couple of minutes that we have left. I want to talk just for a minute about the audacity of Chuck Schumer saying that this administration is incompetent, given the fact that we've had Barry, the most incompetent community leader ever unleashed on America, running things for 8 years. Now, isn't that rather audacious of Chuck Schumer?
Well, yes, and it's also based on a premise that isn't true. The system worked. You know, that's what happens is you take a bill and you count the votes, and if you have the votes, you have the vote. If you have the votes, you have the vote, and then it passes. And this time they counted the votes, they whipped them up, and there weren't the votes there, so they didn't bring the bill to the floor. That's how it works. So I don't know what's incompetent about that. You know, that's kind of how the system works. You know, you count the votes. That's the whip's job, and either you have them or you don't.
All right, we've got two calls. I'm going to take one of them very quickly.
Oh, wow.
You literally have a minute. You're live on X-Rad. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, you're live on X-Rad. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Bill from Wisconsin.
Hi, Bill. What would you like to share with us? And remember, you have 1 minute, sir.
I just want to tell you how much I love Thomas S. Schmitz. That guy, I don't know where you found him, but everything he said is absolutely on the money. I couldn't put it better myself.
Why,
well,
thank
you
Bill, from Wisconsin.
How much did you pay that guy, Thomas?
That's very kind of you, Bill from Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Thomas does have a fan club. You can find him on his fan club at conservativesforpalin.com. Make sure you guys follow him on social media. But thanks for bringing to tell us that, Bill.
No, that really, I wanted to call and say, what a great show. It's my first time listening. I you know, Thomas, I love Thomas. Now I almost love Zan, but I don't want to tell you that. I'll let you go to the next caller. I know you have one more guy. Thank you
All
for
right.
a great
I
show.
I don't know if we've got time to fit them in, but we will try. But thanks for calling, Bill. Have a great
Bye,
weekend,
Bill.
Sir. All right, very quickly, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Xander.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, who's this?
This is Ann from New Jersey. I called your show before.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing? Welcome back to the show. You've got about 30
Thank
seconds.
You.
What would you like
Thank
to share
you
with
so
us?
So much for taking. I want to add to the brilliant guy that just, you know, your co-host, you know, I want to add to the healthcare conversation. I just have a little bit of a different perspective. I agree with a lot of what he's saying, but I kind of look at it from a different perspective. I actually like the healthcare plan. I'm a conservative, and I actually like the elements of it. And I also just wanted to continue to trust the president. Now, 80% of the bill was good, and there was that 20% that my fellow conservatives did not like about it. And I understand, you know, the
right.
you know to be able to, you know, express their views on it and all that. But I was like the president. I was willing to allow this thing to pass. I was, and one other quick point I want to make. I didn't like the fact that everybody called it Ryan Care. I thought that was a little disingenuous and just inappropriate. You know,
what
it was the American Health Care Act, and, you know, and right. I just, you know, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, right. I want to ask you a very quick question just before I let you go. But, you know, you say you're a conservative and you're a Republican, et cetera, et cetera. How pleased are you with the job the president is doing to date? Just a very quick synopsis.
Oh, my God. I think he's doing an amazing thing. Is it like hundreds of things he's done so far? He's a great leader. And we have to remember one most important thing about President Trump is we've always known him to be a great negotiator. And he's extremely smart. And he's not going to allow people like Paul Ryan to walk all over him. But at the same time, he still has to work with the speaker. So I just
Absolutely.
Think that... Right, Xander. And I, by the way, I just love your show. I love listening to you. You're like a magnet.
Thank you very much,
Dan. Thanks so much.
We have to let you go because we're out of time. But please call us again. That was Adam from New Jersey. We are out of time. Thanks to everyone who's made today's show possible. Thanks to our guest, Thomas S. Schmitz, who will be back as my co-host on Monday. You can find all his contact information on today's, on this week's X-Rad Facebook page. But you can check him out at conservativesforpalin.com, and that's the number 4. Thank you so much, Thomas. It's always a pleasure to share with you, sir.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on, and both of you have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend, Thomas, and give love to Jim. As I said, Thomas will be back with us on Monday. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Tony Lusaco. All of Tony's contact details are also on the X-Rad Facebook page for today. Apologies for not giving you lots of time to talk at the end, guys, but we are out of time. Stick around. I will be joining Thomas, not Thomas S. Schmidt. See, I've got you on the brain now, Thomas. I will be joining Joe Messina on the Real Side right after this. So thanks to everybody that's made today's show possible. Thanks to everyone in the live feed. We will be back with you on Monday, and I really do love you all. Bye-bye. Yeah.